It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Jules, the best thing ever happened. And do you know what two franchises, or which two franchises combined for it?
Wait, what the hell? I swear, every single week you just blindside me. We go for the countdown, and then I think you're going to do some sort of preamble as to what we're doing, which, by the way, is the UBP, the UBP, the UBP, or the Untitled Banter podcast, where Scott and I answer all of your gaming questions and other stuff as well. But going back to the secular point, what are you talking about, mate? What two franchises made your day, is what you're saying?
Five words: Sonic the Hedgehog, Monster Hunter. Did you see the crossover?
Oh, yes! That's
One way to get Jules Gill invested in a Sonic the Hedgehog game is to have a Monster Hunter DLC.
Do you know what? I bloody love Monster Hunter as well. And I have to commend my friends Mikey and Lawson for truly getting me onto the Monster Hunter World, the newer one that had all the Iceborne pack and stuff, because I was on the fence about it after playing an absolute shed load of Monster Hunter 3 and then the one that was on the DS as well. And I was like, this is just going to be this experience. Mm-hmm. And I was nervous about jumping into the bigger console platforms with friends, but my lord, that game is hilarious.
Oh, World's
incredible. Now it's got a Sonic expansion.
World's incredible. Rise is really lush on Switch. Like, Monster Hunter, I feel like, is always kind of trying to find its groove. But the idea of big open world Sonic, but you can sort of, I don't know if there's going to be bosses to fight or whether it's just making meats, but like the screenshot they put out
is
just
Sonic. Yeah, that's all you do, is you just
Sonic
make meat.
Roasting a big bit of meat over the spit, which I'm very much into. But yes,
is the entire... No. There's an ethical problem with Sonic doing that, though, because he saves all of the animals constantly from Dr. Robotnik or Dr. Eggman, depending on which timeline that you've come from. And he always saves them because they are being tortured and turned into robots against their will. And then what's he doing here? Oh, he's just having a little snack on his little friend. He's like, you see that little chicken that escaped from the pod at the end of Green Hill Zone Act 1? He's now his dinner, rotisserie style.
It's just tails roasted over an open fire.
Oh, bless him.
But yeah, I thought that immediately. I was like, well, you've never done this before. You've never eaten another creature. Like, this is...
Oh, he eats chili dogs.
He does eat chili dogs. Yeah,
but the thing is that... A chili dog, to be fair, and this is only going off what one American told me a long time ago, because I said, what's actually in a hot dog? It was like a joke that The Simpsons had obviously introduced, and he was like, I don't know, man. I don't think you want to know. And so I think that it's just off cut of snout.
It's just a pile of stuff. Like, I had a chili dog when I was in New York, and it was just a pile of stuff with a bunch of onions on top of it. It was a nice time. But yeah, speaking of nice times, this is the Untitled Banter Podcast. Wanted to do a massive thank you to everybody for buying the mugs. We had a few people get in touch asking about them. Just to reiterate, the website address is whatculture-wrestling.creator-spring.com. And then you can search drinking bottles.
It's not even a catchy title. Like, why couldn't it just be like whatculture/mugs?
Whatculturemugs.com.
Like, we are theoretically a multi-million pound company. Can we not at least buy a singular domain name?
We're not in charge of the URLs. If we were, it would be ubp.com. But sadly,
it would be, that'd be the whole website.
The wrestling merch website. So so you've got to go to whatculture-wrestling.creator-spring. I can barely even say it. .com to find
say it again mugs. Scott, say it again for the people in the back one more time
rolls off the tongue. Go find your mugs. There's a white, a red, and a green variant for them. And the Untitled Banter Podcast, we always get through as many questions, talking points as possible. So first one from SXC Webby, who says, if the Super Mario movie is a success, what could be the next Nintendo movie? My pick is Luigi's Mansion. That feels like it's going to happen in the movie anyway. Luigi is very much in a mansion in that trailer. I'm looking forward
to it. But I think that if he got an offshoot film from it, that would actually be a very easy way for them to reuse assets, because that was apparently one of the reasons why the Lego movie sequel was such a desirable thing, not only because it made an absolute shedload of money, but because all of the assets to make the characters, all the programming rigging to do that was already in place. So all they had to do was just update it and move forward, and it was cutting their costs by, well, I don't know how much it was, but it was a lot that they managed to save doing that. So
it's like a game dev approach where you've already got all the assets, the worlds are rendered or whatever, or the bricks, I guess, are rendered in this case, and you can just put stuff together.
See, I would like it if they were just going to go for the Mario thing and just drill down into that well to get as much gooey goodness as possible. What if they did the offshoots of Mario itself? So you've got your Luigi's Mansion series, you've got your Paper Mario series that could be animated in the style of Into the Spider-Verse.
I would love that.
That janky animation thing. That would be amazing.
I would take all that stuff. I mean, the thing is, that weird, crazy fan rumor that they might do a Smash... Like, they won't, but they might do a Smash Brothers movie, taking the Detective Pikachu model, the Sonic model. You know what? I would love a Smash Brothers movie.
I want it, but it won't be a good movie. I'm just getting real pangs of any Mortal Kombat movie, any Street Fighter movie. It's doing
the first
a fighting.
Mortal Kombat's good.
Okay, well, the first Mortal Kombat is good in the sense that it is.
It's
not
big,
good.
Dumb, campy fun.
Exactly. Yeah, that's fine. That is completely fine. But that's not what I guess Super Smash Brothers would want to be.
No.
And the thing is that how do you do it? Because we're going to have that situation where... Do you remember when Who Framed Roger Rabbit came out? Mm-hmm. And they had the... it was the first and only time to date that Walt Disney and Warner Brothers cartoons, Looney Tunes, had appeared in the same vein together. Mm-hmm. And there was a written... agreement between the two companies that said Mickey Mouse and Daffy Duck will have to be on the exact same amount of screen time, the exact same amount of frames for it to be completely equal. And another example was when Statham and what's his name?
I was just going to say that reminds me of, there was the Vin Diesel, The Rock one, and I'm sure there was Statham and The Rock as well. There was something where they had to be on equal screen time.
Yeah, they couldn't take any more damage than the other person had sustained, so anyone could look weak is what they said. So in this case here, if you had, say, Solid Snake coming up against Pit, then they have got the agreement, then that means that they're both going to double KO each other, and then there's no stakes at all to it.
If the rumor is correct, then Oscar Isaac is Solid Snake, so you could have Oscar Isaac versus Sonic, Ben Schwartz's Sonic, and Ryan Reynolds' Detective Pikachu.
I mean, that would actually be pretty good. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot to be enjoyable about this, but you know what it would be, because Sakurai would stick his oar in, and what would happen is that it would be a case of oh no, all the heroes of the kingdom are defeated. Who can we turn to save the day? It's bloody Kirby. I cannot get over that the subset of fans that will constantly tell me that that Kirby is a, air quotes, hard nut. He is not. He is not a hard man. He is not the sort of... Arnold Schwarzenegger of the Nintendo. He's not.
What problem can he not solve? If he getting set into Rambo territory, he'd have it sorted in a day.
I just hate the fact that the creator of Kirby just looks at him and thinks that that is your new muscle god. It's not muscle Jesus. It's not this.
Oh my god, just classic 80s action movies reimagined as Kirby. I would love that entire series. Give me Predator versus Kirby.
Well, the last action hero, but would just him as that. Fine.
Just give
fine,
me that. I'll take any of them. But yeah, in terms of what Nintendo might do next, it depends if there's a post-credit scene for the original Mario. I still am predicting Wario is in the post-credits, voiced by Ryan Reynolds. I think you need someone who's the opposite of Chris Pratt. And then I don't know whether you do just Mario stuff. I mean, do they do a Mario Kart movie?
Why does Ryan Reynolds get the thing there? Why can't Danny DeVito get it? Why can't he be Wario?
Well, for me, it's Reynolds because he's second to Pratt.
Hey, it's me, Wario. Can I give you an egg in this trying time?
I would love him to do that style of Wario. I don't know who you cast as Waluigi either, but I feel like if you do...
Charlie Day.
Jolly Day again.
Yeah,
if you
exactly.
do something... In that regard, I wonder how much they flesh out the Mario universe if they cross things over, because it feels like Zelda's what should be their next thing, after Mario and Zelda, and go down that route. I know they've tried it before and it never really got off the ground or anything, but then you've got to try and cast a Link and do all that stuff. Maybe.
It is a very hard one there. I think that we go a slightly different route and we resurrect a franchise that has not had a game in many a year. And I think that fans would be ecstatic to see it on the silver screen. And that would be F-Zero. F-Zero, the movie, would be amazing.
I would love that.
What's the best thing about Star Wars Episode 1? Yeah, apart from the lightsaber fights, it's the pod racing sequences. Imagine a whole film built of this rags to riches speed racer that's just kind of getting to grips. You could have Captain Falcon trying to solve a murder while he's... Oh, you get Carl Urban back. He would he'd be Dredd, but as Captain Falcon. So we'd just be like, Falcon Punch. I know you can't see this at home, people, but I'm doing the biggest chin I can.
He is. That's an incredible... So the thing is, I like the idea of racing movies, I like the idea of tournament movies. There's nowhere near enough of them. It's what was the best thing about the newest Mortal Kombat movie without the rest of it. And I feel like that whole idea, you know, do an F-Zero movie, do a Mario Kart movie. Like, if you take Jack Black's Bowser, put him in a cart, that would be incredible. Charlie Day as Luigi doing the death stare and screaming at people. Right. Like, why not?
I'm placing a bet right now that there will be a scene or an after credit sequence where they go kart racing, that they will come together like Bowser and Mario, and they'll be like, it's time to settle this, Mario. And then they'll go kart racing. 100% it's going
to
be
in there. If the post credits is just him, so everything's nice, happy days, sunshine in the background, and he looks to the side and he sees a cart and he just looks at it, and then we cut. I'd float off my chair for how awesome that would be. Speaking of Bowser's voice, though, very, very quickly, I want to talk about Mario Sunshine. Where do you come down on Mario Sunshine? Because I'd never played through it. I played through all of it across yesterday and a little bit the night before, and I do agree that is the worst 3D Mario by some considerable distance. I was raging a lot of that game.
I enjoy what Mario Sunshine does in terms of using the jetpack mechanics and the propellant system and using the flood. I enjoy that, but I do find that the control scheme actually is quite a hindrance a lot of the time. I find that the platforming is way too easy, and then it gets stupidly difficult in those weird worlds where they just basically gave up on level design.
Here's a bunch of rotating squares.
I was just like, come on, lads. Like, you're meant to be some of the best game designers in the world, and you couldn't come up with anything better than the demo for Ukulele's Toy Box thing.
That's the thing. All those like disconnected, or you're in a different realm style worlds just feel so thrown together. Like, you tipped a box of preschooler toys out and then made them spin a bit, and it's all this this brick turns around a lot. Yeah, I hated all that stuff. Then the checkpoints as well. Like, if you lose in those areas, which sometimes you don't even get into until you're halfway through another level, and then you warp somewhere, and if you die there, you go back to the whole beginning. And it's just like, oh my God. But at least it's a very, very beautiful game. I was playing it on the All-Stars collection,
That bloody pachinko machine area as well, where you've got to go down through the machine and you've got to try and land. I hate that bit. That bit was so annoying.
It's the bit when all the, what do you call it, the pianters, when they've got to throw you. And you've got to get thrown bits a bit. And I put it on YouTube where they threw me and I just hit the ledge, the side of it, and just fell down. And I was just like, what literal escaped convict designed this game? Anyway, we should get through some questions. Next question from Steve, who says, greatest gaming moment ever. I'd probably have to give it more thought, but right now I'd say Price killing Makarov at the end of Modern Warfare 3. Greatest gaming moment ever. Where does your gut go?
What do you mean, just sort of in like a fist pumping moment, or do you mean like an emotional moment?
Whatever your brain / heart serves up. Because my mind goes to and I mentioned this too much, but it's wielding the spanker, the rocket launcher against the Scarab tank in Halo 2. I will think of something else, but I absolutely love that moment. That will be my go-to. That's the most elated I've been in gaming back then, apex of Halo with that specific set piece.
I'm trying to think of moments where I just sat back and was like, yeah, okay, this is gaming. I mean, I had a few moments like that. Like, we'll go for a modern example and then we'll go for a childhood one. Mm. Modern example was Sifu, finishing that game and just feeling that sense of satisfaction. And especially when it gave you that ending that just goes, by the way, there's another way to end this game. Yep. And you go, oh my God, this game has just opened up on itself. Like, again, this is amazing.
Wuday is the way.
But in terms of like a childhood moment, I would probably say that it has to be that feeling of elation when I overcame a really difficult boss in Final Fantasy VII. I think it was the first time that I beat Ruby Weapon after spending hours and hours trying to figure out how not to get dragged under the sand by its tentacles and stuff. But I remember beating it and just being like, well, that gaming is not going to get any better, because it forced me to think in so many different ways in order to overcome this boss.
All those like giant, like, you know, multi-thousand HP bosses. I've never put the time into. I mean, I platinumed Final Fantasy VII Remake, but I've never actually beaten any of the original weapons, like in the original game, because they always felt like they required like 20 hours of just raw grinding. And I was always like, someday I'll go back and do that. But the thing is, like, ironically, you do have a hell of a sense of satisfaction when it finally pays off. It's just that it's so much time invested to get like to be even to do any damage to it, like, you know, to even make a dent or whatever. But yeah, I think, like, overall, like, if I go to modern stuff, Sifu's a hell of a show. I think God of War's got some great moments in, but it's like, it's the subtle things.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like subtle things that I really like at the very, very beginning of 2018's God of War, when you realize the Kratos is bandaging up his old, like, chain wounds and he's trying to move on. Every little facial expression with that version of Kratos, I absolutely love. But yeah, next question from Gary S, who says, listener from the start of the UBP, first time write in. Are PlayStation affecting their reputation this generation? With their comments around the Activision Blizzard acquisition, the $70 remix, and the price hike for the PlayStation 5, even though in theory it's cheaper now to make. What do you think of PlayStation?
Yeah, well, PlayStation I do agree with. I think that their reputation has been dented somewhat with all of these because...
It's very cold generation.
Well, we Scott and I have discussed each of those points separately, but it all culminates to create a company that seems very profit-driven right now, and it's ironic considering that their motto was for the players, because it very much does not feel like that. However,
for the investors,
we are at this weird sort of like light at the end of the tunnel moment now, because we are finally exiting the pandemic era of gaming and are now getting to enter into the...
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Well, the industry's back off its ass era of gaming, which means that we're finally getting the titles that justify going forward with a new console that finally express where Sony's mindset is in terms of game development.
Games that are made for the new consoles and the new consoles only. Like the new Need for Speed is only on PS5 and Series X,
Exactly. And that to me is like we're finally moving towards a point that arguably we should have been at 2 to 3 years ago. I do think that there have been some really bad practices. I don't agree with the fact that they are charging more more for their PlayStation 5s, using scarcity and FOMO to try and manipulate the market in that sense, even though the shortage of components is lesser than it was before, and that they can produce it for a cheaper cost than they did before as well. So there's a lot that I don't like about Sony, but there's a lot that I don't like about every single video game publisher, developer, manufacturer, because it's the moment you look behind the scenes and realize that every action is, as a company, should be driven by profit, it unfortunately means that somebody has to suffer, and it's usually the consumers who do.
The thing is, like, PlayStation are way more, like, optically, they're way more out there. There's more to talk about with them. You can talk about their range of exclusives, you can talk about their price drops, you can talk about what's coming next, and, you know, the removable disc drive that leaked for the next SKU for next year and everything. Xbox have nothing out there. Like, it's just like, oh, they're the Game Pass company, and they're nailing it, and the deals they're making are great, and they have the Activision Blizzard stuff, in theory, but that's just going to bolster Game Pass. And then Nintendo, their biggest shield is, oh, it's Nintendo, they're crazy, they do whatever they want. If you want to do voice chat, it's through the mobile app. Like, they're just ridiculous. So it's just like, okay, whatever. So it feels like PlayStation, and because they're the market leader as well, like, they get talked about a lot more. I do think they, like you said, are very profit driven this generation. And the Jim Ryan era, because he's not like a mouthpiece, he doesn't really do much in terms of getting out there and talking. He's not very warm, doesn't come across as a very warm individual. I'm sure he's a very lovely man, but in comparatively to Shigeru Miyamoto or Phil Spencer, or, you know, previous people like Doug Bowser, whatever, like, or active person right now, I don't think that the Jim Ryan era is very personified. It doesn't really come across very personable. It's just a bunch of business decisions, and then we read about them on the blog. Like, there's not really much going on other than just financial stuff.
Weird way of approaching their announcements, isn't it, by using that blog? Just, if you're not tuned into 2001 and checking your MySpace account for a text ball, like, then I don't understand the way that they're doing. They seem to be approaching things from a very different mindset, from a different era. And I wonder if this is going to cause them long-term ramifications, because, I mean, Sony's going to be forever popular based on the video games that it puts out. But the problem is that with the recent slew of remasters that they've announced that are coming out for it, games that arguably don't need to be remastered, then they are kind of shooting themselves in the foot by milking their fan base. They're basically just going, you are a hardcore fan, and you are the one we're going to charge the most for being a fan. And that's not the right way of doing things.
No, you can almost drill it down to how much they'll charge for the Horizon remaster, because that's only a five-year-old.
I can't believe that's getting a remaster. Like, I know that we went through the same rigmarole with The Last of Us, but Josh was saying that there does at least justify some elements worth purchasing. But I'm not going to get it. You're not going to get it. He got it because of a review copy, and I don't think that he would have bought it of his own money.
I think he's like loves The Last of Us through and through, that he might have just had to scratch that itch anyway. But I think that's the thing they're almost banking on, is like, how much do you love it? How much do you love the newest rendering tech? Like in Zero Dawn's case, it's like, well, we up-resed everything for Forbidden West. Aloy has a new character model. We might as well plug that back into Zero Dawn. But like, you might as well is not very interesting. Like, no, I would rather you put that R&D into something new, especially in Guerrilla's case. I'd rather they worked on something else.
And if they turn around and say, oh, well, you know what, we're not taking that much time and attention away from future projects because it's only going to be like a small remodding and texture updates, then why are you charging so much for it? There's no argument that they can give to justify either the inflated price tag or the fact that they go back and retweak and retool stuff. I personally do not like this idea of going back and altering the original, because there are some games that they look crap nowadays, but I still go back and play them because it's not about the graphics. It's not about the graphical fidelity, because it's the mechanics that age a game more than anything else.
Horizon looks gorgeous anyway. Like, Zero Dawn looks great on PS5. It already had a PS5 update, like 4K 60. Easy.
So I do not understand what they're going through with this one. And it's a bit greedy. Very, very greedy.
Yeah, it just feels like reheating stuff over and over again. I get the cold Jim Ryan business angle. It's like, well, why don't we do more with this finished game? You might as well just release it again with a fresh coat of paint. And then, it all depends on how much they then charge for that idea. If they then think that's worth £70, then I think that'll be massively off-putting. And The Last of Us Part 1 remake didn't seem to sell that well. Like, I was looking at it on the best-selling chart on Amazon across the launch weekend, and it was dropping down every day. I guess we'll see. Next question from Michael Tanner, who says, were we excited by the Dead Space trailer? Personally, the graphics look very nice and shiny, but nothing else really grabbed me.
really, it didn't grab you.
I think the same as that dude. I sort of like, I watched the trailer and I was like, yep, this looks like how my mind already remembered it. And the gameplay looked exactly the same. So I was like, this is solid. I love Dead Space, but
yeah. I guess we're entering into the same thing of Dead Space still, even to this day, I say it looks great. Atmospherically cannot be beaten. The only thing that's putting me off is the fact that the microtransactions that seem to be attached to it, they are something that is changing the core mechanics of this game. And I don't know what they're going to be. It could just be cosmetic stuff. It could be that. But if they add in buy some health or packs that give you extra like loot bonuses or grind to upgrade your gear, and it is a sort of pay to win PvE experience, then that will change it, because horror is based on what you don't have rather than what you do. So adding in the option to buy your way to safety or at least mitigate some of the danger is the antithesis of what scary games should be. If that comes in, then I have a genuine problem with what they are setting as a standard for the genre, because we have not had, outside a Resident Evil Village, which admittedly is more action focused than it has been horror focused of recent times, Dead Space is a straight up action horror, sorry, a horror title first and action is secondary, I would argue.
Oh, so Dead Space 1, definitely. I always think of Dead Space 1 and Dead Space 2 as like Alien and Aliens. Like
yeah,
Dead
very Space 2, different vibes.
You know, kicks off considerably, but Dead Space 1 is very like corridor crawling, slow burn horror, with little spikes of horror, spikes of action. But yeah, I was just like, yeah, that looks like an upticked version of a 2007 game. Like, that looks really sweet. But we're only going back two generations anyway, and that game was already pretty pioneering in terms of its lighting and atmosphere anyway. So yeah, I guess we'll see. I think the fact that it's directly up against the Callisto Protocol is interesting, because for me, Callisto exciting.
Yeah, I mean, the Callisto Protocol is like something that has been immediately like hot listed, because I genuinely cannot wait to play that.
I'm so curious what the story is as well. Like, it started as being part of the PUBG universe and then now it's its own thing. And it's like, what weird prison planet conspiracy thing are you trying to do?
It still blows my mind that PUBG has a story. Like, I remember like watching that weird trailer, which was like that weird secretive guy who was committing the experiments using the...
I never saw this.
It was really odd. Like, I remember just being like, what actually is the plot of PUBG? And I Googled it, and it was just around the time this trailer came out, and it started explaining that it was all this like government conspiracy and stuff. I haven't been following it since, so I don't know if it's expanded. But it was the same time that Fortnite started adding in a meta story on top of its one. So it was like, why do they need stories?
Well, that's like, it, right? I mean, they looked at the amount of crossover
guys
events.
They suddenly come out and be like a game that's played in the Animus by Desmond from back in Assassin's Creed. Like, is there going to be some like larger scale thing? And does it need to be connected? We're over this connected universe.
I know. Avengers
is done. We're done with it now.
I feel like that was them looking at, like you said, the MCU crossover stuff, multiverse stuff, and going like, well, we need something, guys. We need lore. We need something to spin off into other things.
We don't. Sometimes a game can just be a game. It can
Not
just
everything
be a
needs
game.
To be the MCU. Yeah. Next question from Stephen Marr, which is kind of funny considering what we just talked about. Are there any video games that are wildly popular that you yourselves never got into? I did have a brief stint with Battle Royale, but that would be my go-to for this. I just absolutely chemically cannot care about Call of Duty Warzone. I just don't care about Battle Royale.
It's a shame, because I really, there's a part of me that wants to get into them, like really wants to do it, because I look at people enjoying them. I look at the tactics on play, the teamwork, the skill. And do not get me wrong, I am not belittling anyone who loves that genre or that playstyle. I just can't get into it. I'm just much more of a fan of being a spectator than I am a player, because I'm not as good as the people playing these games. And the skill level is so high now that anyone entering in as a noob gets decimated quickly.
Sometimes,
it is a trial by fire experience, and I'm not up for learning that. I went through my DayZ experience of having a group of people all in one area and not necessarily battling for the pole position, but I had that experience. I had 70 plus hours in that game.
Right.
Done the prototypical Battle Royale games. So I feel like I've done it all. Like, what do you
that
get?
Was like
what
my
do you
thing.
Get out of it?
Yeah, in 2017, like I when Fortnite first landed, I played a lot of Fortnite. That was most of my 2017. Played a ton of that. I've played a ton of PUBG, a lot of H1Z1, and I played the original Call of Duty Blackout. That was their original Battle Royale.
Which was, I heard, really good.
It was fine, yeah. I think they improved a lot in Warzone. Then I played a little bit of Warzone, but I just, for me, it's the problem with engagement. Like, if I'm going to play a multiplayer game, I want to have a PvP experience. I want to fight some dudes. I want to be engaged. Yeah. I don't want to run for 20 minutes and then get shot up the arse and have to reset and do it all over again. Like, that's was the running side of Battle Royale always annoys me, and I kind of like, I want something that engages me more than just I'm running to get to the bit where I can have an actual PvP experience or
yeah,
something
100%
like that.
Agree.
I think games have got better with it, but yeah, mine would definitely be Battle Royale. Do you have anything else that's wildly popular that you couldn't get into?
I have one specific game that I didn't want to get into because I was worried that I'd lose my entire life to it, and that was just World of Warcraft. I look at it again, sort of like peeking over the gate at this amazing experience that people are still having to this day, and I just don't want to join it because I know that I will lose hundreds and hundreds of hours. Right. I have kind of like an addictive personality when it comes to specific types of video game loops. Mm-hmm. So if I get caught in that, I won't be able to do anything else. So I need to stay away from it and pick and choose my games carefully so that I, as I've said to you before, I have to curate how many games I can have on my Steam or on my Game Pass, because if I have too many, then I'm going to fall down the rabbit hole and never finish any of them.
That's good discipline, though. I mean, I just have everything installed all the time and then I just ping pong between 50 things.
You have the drive. You have the drive, the capacity to do it. I just don't... I'm an old man. I have no ability to stay up past 10 p.m. nowadays.
Yeah. Well, you've got to stay up past midnight tonight, mate. The new Alder Bridge album's out.
Yes, that's what I'm staying
up. By the time people listen to this, it'll be out.
But, I'm off to see Alexis on Fire tomorrow, so we're both living our 2010s pretty well.
2003, back with a vengeance. That's a very good time. Next question from George Jackson, who says, why do game studios hold on to IPs that they have no intention of doing anything with? Surely it makes more financial sense to sell them instead of paying for the rights and let other developers do something with them. I'm looking at you, EA, where are my Simpsons games?
Yeah, that is a very good point. I guess that there's residual royalties that they get for all the occasional sales. I guess that it's always the option to have it in their back pocket so that no one else can take it from you. I mean, the worst thing that for a video game publisher would be is say that you gave up the rights to the Simpsons games. Somebody came along, did a good game and outsold it and became known as being the person who did better than you, and therefore you couldn't ever have it back again.
Because at the minute, I'm going back through Soul Reaver because I was just like, that whole Legacy of Kain survey thing made me just remember, I think about Soul Reaver nearly every week anyway, but I'm going to go back through the original Soul Reaver, and that game is still absolutely phenomenal. I absolutely love it. But yeah, the Legacy of Kain as an IP hasn't done anything, ironically, since 2003 when Defiance came out.
Since Nosgoth.
We don't talk about Nosgoth. That's the Star Wars prequels of Legacy of Kain, even though they eventually got reappreciated. But yeah, I feel like something like Legacy of Kain, it needs a very specific hand to be dealt. Like, I know that they were developing Dead Sun, and that game got cancelled and everything, but because it was so like authored, like there's such a specific feel to that script, I think that might be another wrinkle to why people don't go back to these things. Is, you know, there was a specific creative team that made this, there's a specific feel to the script or the direction or whatever, and if you can't replicate that, if you can't do it right, everyone's just going to hate you for it. So it's like, you might as well, you absolutely need to like nail this.
There's other things as well, which is if certain developers worked on the original game, like you say, became synonymous with those games, like Grant Kirkthorpe for the music for Banjo-Kazooie. If he wasn't attached to the next one that came out, people would actually probably detract from it. So it's actually, sometimes you just can't get the right people in a line in order to get the project off the ground in the first place.
What do you think of BioShock without Ken Levine?
I'm worried. I genuinely am worried because I didn't let it be known. I genuinely think that BioShock Infinite is the weakest of the original trilogy. I still think that BioShock 2 far exceeds it in so many places. So,
plus Minerva's Den's really solid. The DLC.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's amazing. So I think that maybe his time was already done and dusted by the time that Infinite came out, because he was kind of out the door by that point anyway, wasn't he? He was like, here's the idea, and then you're going to change it into this game that you want it to be to sell more copies, and that's not necessarily where I sit with it. Like, I mean, originally, BioShock was meant to be a System Shock spiritual successor that was a point-and-click style adventure, and then they added in guns because Microsoft said it wasn't going to sell well or something like that. So I think that without it, we're going to see a much more action focus. We're going to probably try and go down the rabbit hole of more timey-wimey shenanigans, which is not the way it should go. Horror was definitely the thing that sold BioShock, and setting it in space means that we're just going to go sci-fi, and that's a big genre shift, and I don't know. I'm curious about
some of the rumors. One of those, there was a big leak that I remember getting deleted. It was all about how it's meant to be, it's ostensibly based on A Tale of Two Cities, and it's almost like this extrapolation of like class warfare, and it's like the people above and the people below, and then there was like a rebellion forming between the two, and it was going down that route, and I was like, that kind of lets you have your philosophical cake and have your action cake as well, and kind of go down that route. So I guess I'm curious, but I agree with you. Like, I like Infinite was fine. It didn't make me think or whatever. And I hated the scene where you finally get to confront Comstock and then just immediately kill the guy. And I was like, oh, we're just not even going to address anything. Yeah. And then obviously they have a big twist relating to that later that you would have solved if they had a conversation or something. That it's just like stuff like that that I feel could have been a bit tighter. But yeah, overall, I think that like it's like what you said. It's like they might do something with an IP, so it's better to hold on to it and just hope that something will happen eventually with that game.
It's interesting as well, because when those people who are disgruntled maybe leave projects and they're known for creating it, you get things like the Callisto Protocol, you get things like the Outer Worlds, where you get people who are basically just saying, look, we want to make another Fallout New Vegas or another Dead Space, but we can't use those IPs because somebody else is sitting on them, so let's just make our own version for it.
Well, that,
and as a result, it doesn't sell as well because it can't trade on the branding. So basically, it's protecting others from doing a better job than you will do with them.
Yeah. Well, I literally only think the Dead Space remake exists because they know Callisto Protocol is coming out.
100% agree. Yeah.
And that's very much marketing itself as from the creators of Dead Space. So EA is just saying like, well, here's the actual Dead Space. But yeah, I mean, that new game, The Finals, made by the ex-Battlefield people, like looks incredible and I guess feels like what they might have done with Battlefield if they were able to without all the trappings of EA sort of crunching it to death with 2042. Final question from Jack Gingell, who says, do you have any games that you play for nostalgic purposes, like once a year, etc.? My go-tos are Broken Sword and Final Fantasy VII.
Oh man, to go back through and play Final Fantasy VII on the reg, that's a nice feeling. For me, Ape Escape, 100%, I will always go back and play it just occasionally because I love everything about it. I mean, I've said before many times, it was the first game where I saved up all of my pennies to go and buy the game, and then unfortunately I didn't have the DualShock controller, so I had to save up again to buy the DualShock controller for it. It was a very embarrassing moment in my life, yeah. But it was the first game to mandate the use of it as well. Like, that was groundbreaking. And, like, kids today won't appreciate what life was like without thumbsticks.
Kids today will not jump in a little yellow dinghy and then have to rotate the sticks to paddle.
Yeah.
That was so incredible. Mine would just be the old school Tekken games, Tekken 3 or Tekken Tag. I know where my life was at both those times. Like, Tekken 3 was high school, Tekken Tag was a little bit later. That whole era of when the PlayStation 2 was launching, like that lead up to the PS2, and then that initial Christmas and that whole 2000-2001 era, I can just put the soundtrack on. They're all on Spotify. Like, I'm rarely not listening to the Tekken soundtracks anyway. And Tekken 3 and Tekken Tag would be the ones that I just go back to. I managed to get them running on my phone and on my Steam Deck, so I'm just kind of revisiting all that stuff.
Just living life, baby.
Old school Tekken is a good way to be. But yes, for now, this has been the Untitled Banter Podcast. Massive thank you to everybody for sending in their questions, and quadruple thank yous for anybody who has ordered a mug. Once again, that tasty URL is whatculture-wrestling.com. creator-spring.com.
Oh, so catchy.
Maybe we'll buy a URL and redirect it so it's just the mug boys.
Well, I want to get a black t-shirt with white text saying that on so that we can truly represent how catchy that slogan is.
Like that the Beatles one where it's like Ringo and Paul and John, but it's just what culture and wrestling and
creator-spring and creator.com.
But yeah, massive thank you to everybody. You can catch us next week. I'll put the question out over on Twitter on the Thursday. I'm @LPA89. Jules, what are you?
I'm over there on Twitter @RetroJ, but the O is a zero.
Be beautiful, and thanks once again. We'll catch you next week.
Goodbye, everyone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.